are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner, Wednesday, April 20th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. The DM's always open for you. And subscribe so you get this podcast once the new episodes drop. We will talk to Paul Zilm, who is a risk supervisor at Circa Sports. Paul and I actually spoke last week, but things got really busy here with the Red Sox home opener, the Bruins games going on, so I had to push it to this week. Paul's been booking Kentucky Derby bets for months now at Circa, and he's confident in the Derby favorite. There's a horse that has risen up the boards like Paul has never seen before, and there's also one that Paul likes to crash the party in the exotic market. So we'll get you ready again for the Kentucky Derby. We talked to Colin Sheehan last week, Paul Zilm today, and Uncle Kirk will join us, Kirk Rockwell, the week of the run for the Roses. Pending the governor's approval, another domino has fallen in the Northeast. Daniel Wallach tweeted this out late on Tuesday night. Just in all caps, Maine Senate approves Governor Mills' sports betting proposal by a 23-11 vote. Under the measure, three tribes will control online sports betting in Maine, and the bill now goes to the governor's desk for the signature. So, Maine will legalize pending the governor's approval, which will happen. You will soon be able to get in your car and leave Massachusetts to drive to Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire, New York, and Rhode Island to place a bet. But you can't do it in Massachusetts. How about that? Another one. It's that Rick Ross. No, not Rick Ross. It's the DJ Khaled, the meme. Another one. Another one. Another one. You could pretty much go drop a pin in Massachusetts, and every bordering state except for Vermont, you'll be able to bet. Isn't that insane? And the Senate president here is still, I don't know. We're working on it. Climate change is more important. I know several politicians in Massachusetts have been very vocal about wanting to get this done, but it's clear the heavy hitters in this state are not progressing the language and the bill. I remember when I got here in December of 2020, the people at NESN, who are higher ups here, were thinking, all right, it'll happen by summer 2021. Well, here we are. It's almost May of 2022 and still no progress. The bill went through the House last summer. Senate still hasn't voted on it. Governor Baker is not going to rerun, but clearly there's a lot here that is holding this from happening, and nobody knows a realistic timeline. The fact that I still can't bet somewhere in this state, but I can drive to the north and go to New Hampshire, now drive to the northeast, go to Maine, swing down south to the east, it's Rhode Island, to the west, it's Connecticut. If I'm in Western Mass, I can cross the border, bet in New York, but I can't bet on the Patriots or the Celtics or the Red Sox or the Bruins inside this state. It's a joke. And I'm not here to fire shots at politicians, but why can't we do this? We can drink alcohol in this state. We can buy cigarettes in this state. We can smoke marijuana in this state. We can gamble, but we can't bet on sports. That's the fine line. I think it's clear some of the Massachusetts higher-ups are in conversation with Adrian Wojnarowski at ESPN, who thinks that Celtics-Nets game one and the way the fans treated Kyrie is because of sports betting. Yes, that's it. That's why the fans hate Kyrie. Because they bet on his second quarter point prop, right, Woj? Forget the fact that Kyrie told Celtics Nation he was going to be here for the long run, then said he wasn't going to be here, quit on the team, and joined the Brooklyn Nets. That's probably not the reason that the fans hate Kyrie, or the 10 beers they had at the greatest bar before the game. It's the sports betting that you can't even do here in Massachusetts. That is why the fans are all riled up. The average sports bet is like $20, $25 now. And if you're a parlay person, you're parlaying even less. $5, $10 on your 5-16 parlays. How tone deaf is Woj? Clearly doesn't gamble. Obviously has no idea what he's talking about. But that's neither here nor there. Another state joining the party while Massachusetts sits on the sidelines. I know Woj won't love this conversation, but I'll do it anyways. I believe now is the time to buy the Brooklyn Nets at plus 190. I mean, you think about where DraftKings opened the number, which was a bad number, but it's still a number. DraftKings opened the Nets minus 145 to win the series. Vegas opens minus 150, Boston. Now, the Celtics are as high as minus 240. I saw one book had minus 250, but then that came down because a couple people bit the apple on the Celtics at 2-1. So the best price you could find right now, a couple shops have the Brooklyn Nets to win this series at plus 190. I've already been getting tweets all day because I sent it out at Chicken X Dinner. Let's bet the Nets series plus 190. And all the Celtics people are like, boo. Oh, he hates the Celtics. No, I hate the math on the series. I watched game one. Yeah, the Celtics were up, but the Celtics also blew that lead. And with Kyrie Irving's three in the final minute, Nets are up three. Celtics ball. Odds are good the Nets are going to win that game. They don't win. You give the Celtics credit. Jason Tatum with an amazing play. The catch, the spin, the layup at the buzzer. Good. Celtics win. But the Nets very easily could have won that game. And the price in a coin flip result, or after a coin flip result, the Nets went from plus 120 or plus 130 to now plus 190. And I feel like the Nets are a very good bet at this point in the series to make this a series. They don't have to really win the series for me to lock in a profit. The logic and the thought process is if Brooklyn wins game two, which again, I think they will, all of a sudden home court shifts to Brooklyn and the Nets are minus 140. That sounds fair. I mean, it's somewhere around there, whether it's minus 125 or minus 160. Brooklyn will be the favorite if they earn the split in Boston. If it's 1-1 going back to New York, Brooklyn's the favorite. And then the Nets are going to be a four-point favorite probably in game number three. So I envision a scenario where if the Nets win game two and you have plus 190 in your back pocket on Brooklyn to win the series, you can then bet Boston before game three at plus 120 or maybe higher, or the Nets win game three, which again, the books will say they're favored to do, and then you can get the Celtics at plus 185 or plus 190. Imagine what that price goes to if the Nets win games two and three. As I say it out loud, Brooklyn's probably minus 220, maybe minus 240. And then you could bet the Celtics at plus 180, plus 200. And now you have both teams to win a series at 2-1, give or take. That's the plan. I didn't want to bet Boston at minus 250. But yeah, I'll put a little Nets in my back pocket at 2-1. Durant's going to play better in game two. Irving is unguardable probably in this series. The Nets suck on D, but they still have Durant and Irving. There's a very possible scenario that the Nets win game two and game three, and now you can free roll. That's the plan. That's the process. Buy low on the Nets to set up a potential bet on the Celtics. I think the series goes seven. So eventually, Celtics fans, I hate to tell you, Brooklyn's going to win a game. And I'm betting before it happens so I get the best price. Speaking of prices, I don't know how often you look at the NBA Finals MVP market, but there is one riser, and it's very obvious if you've been watching the playoffs who it should be, Steph Curry. Remember, before that price came out, Golden State and Denver, Warriors were like minus 200 because we weren't sure about Steph, and the narrative was We don't know if he's going to play in game one. Comes off the bench, game one against Denver, 16 points in 21 minutes. Okay, that's effective. That's efficient. And then the explosion in game two, 34 points. The DEFCON lineup was unbelievable. I think I saw StatMuse tweet out that they played 11 minutes together, their top five, and scored 47 points in 11 minutes, 7 of 8 from 3. Insane. So Curry's clearly good to go. Before the series started, Curry was as high as 14-1 to win the finals MVP. After those two performances, plus the injury to Devin Booker, and money obviously comes into the market on Curry after he plays the way he played, Curry is as low as 5-1 in the market. BetMGM has 5-1. PointsBet has plus 575. So he's come down quite a bit. Almost $10 from the beginning of the playoffs to the point we're at right now, two games into Curry's postseason. But I'm not saying the market's over. That's just a move that you missed on Curry, likely, and I didn't bet it either. I wish I did. There's another player, Durant, who has gone up 10-16-1 after one loss. Durant was 10-1 before game one, 16-1 right now, heading into game two. I'm not saying the Nets are going to win the title. I don't think they are. But the point is, this is a very fluid market that will continue to change as the postseason treks on. And the player odds are going to fluctuate based on team status and series standing. Another really interesting player to find value on, and I use the word value very relatively, of course. Take Jimmy Butler, Miami Heat star. The Heat are the number one seed in the East, and they have a really nice bracket. A likely second-round matchup against Philly, and then they get one of these three teams in the East Finals. Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee. You only have to go through one of those teams. You don't have to face all three of them. You only get one. Those three will cannibalize each other. Only one team comes out of that mess. Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee. The winner of all that likely faces Miami, and the Heat have home court. And it's no secret, Miami is Jimmy Butler's team. So why would you bet the Heat at 7-1 or plus 7.25 to win the NBA title when you can bet on Jimmy Butler to be Finals MVP at 10-12-1? Another angle involves the Suns. Suns are still the title favorite. I'm a little concerned about Booker's hamstring, and in a sport like basketball, we are always exploding and cutting and driving. A hamstring probably doesn't get better this postseason. I'm no doctor, but that's my guess. But with Phoenix still favored, and still a very good team and a great coach, you can bet Chris Paul to be the Finals MVP. Phoenix to win the title is as low as plus 275, but you can find Paul to win the MVP at 8 or 9 to 1. Booker's the best player. That's obvious. But these awards often come down to narratives. And if Chris Paul averages near a triple-double in the finals at age 37 to win his first ever NBA title, you think he'll get love for the award? Yeah. You could probably split a unit, I would argue. Rather than bet, say you're going to bet $100 on the Suns to win the title at plus 275 or 3 to 1. You could probably just bet 50 each on Booker at 5 to 1 and Paul at 9 to 1. That seems to be a better shake for you. If Booker wins it, that's 250. I feel like that's probably, and you'd maybe stagger it a little more. Maybe you bet 60 on Booker and 40 on Paul, or 70 on Booker and 30 on Paul, 30 on Paul at 9 to 1, page of 270. You can get creative, but this market, it gives you value on the right players. And I'm not telling you to bet Kyrie Irving at 40 to 1 or Jaylen Brown at 40 to 1, but even Giannis. How about Giannis? He's plus 550, 6 to 1 now. When Milwaukee shuts out Chicago's lights, Giannis is going to be plus 450. When Miami beats Atlanta and knocks them out, Butler's going to go down to 8 to 1. Here's another player for you locals. Jason Tatum is 9-1, 10-1 to win the Finals MVP, but the Celtics are 7-1 or 750 to win it all. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. I still like the Warriors a lot. If they stay healthy and they shoot the way that they've shot, small sample size, two games, but whew. If Curry gets the Warriors to the West Finals against the Suns, Curry's going to be down to 3-1. And if they beat Phoenix to reach the Finals, Curry's going to be minus 150 to be the MVP. I know you missed the big move at 14, 12, 10-1, down to plus 575, 5-1, but there is a world where there's still not great value, but decent value at 575 if the Warriors do what some believe they could do. And that market is going to change. It's going to change maybe day by day, if not every other day. Colorado Rockies hit them yesterday again as a dog. This team, I know they played a lot of their games at Coors Field, but they were clearly undervalued in the betting market. The Rockies are the most profitable baseball team right now with an 8-3 record, and they're up 7 units. But if you take it another step further, 6 of the 8 wins are plus money. I checked out StatFox, and I looked at their game log, game by game. The Rockies have cashed so far this year plus 120, plus 150, plus 140, plus 120, plus 190, plus 135. And I don't think there's going to be a big overcorrection in a lot of these markets involving the Rockies because they're still in the division with the Dodgers and the Padres. And they're going to play a lot of games, obviously, against those two teams. You play them each 19 times. The Rockies are going to probably, at the end of the day, I think they're an 81, 83 win baseball team. But if they can get to that level when they're always getting plus money, that's a team that at the end of the day is going to make you money. Let's say, for example, the Rockies on average are plus 130, and you bet them 10 times, and you go 5-5. When you lose the 5, you're down 5, but you win the 5 at plus 130, you're up 6.5. So in those 10 games, even though you split right down the middle, wins and losses, 5-5, you're going to make a unit and a half because the juice is on your side. It's the anti-Yankee thing. If you lay the Yankees at minus 170 every single game, go 5-5, guess what? When you lose 5 games at minus 170, you're down 8.5. So you go 5-5, but you're down 3.5 units. And I'll talk about StatFox until I'm blue in the face. It is proving, at least early in the season, and things will change because it's a fluid season, but the teams that are undervalued and making you money are the Rockies, the Athletics, the Chicago Cubs, and the St. Louis Cardinals. Cubs are 6-5, but they're up 2.4 units. On the other side, these teams are overrated, specifically these two teams. The Philadelphia Phillies. They are chalk most nights, and they're going to be chalk most nights. The Phillies are 4-8. They're down 6.6 units. Now, they've got twice as many losses as wins, but when you look at Philadelphia's losses, these things pile up. Last three games, losses, minus 130, minus 160, minus 140. They have another loss at minus 220. You're going to pay a premium on Philly because guess what? They won the offseason and they got Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos. That's not a team that's going to make you a lot of money this year, I don't think. And we'll see what happens with Atlanta. They still don't have Ronald Acuna Jr. back. They still don't have Mike Soroka. But Atlanta, how about this? 6-7, as I tape this on a Wednesday afternoon, 6 wins and 7 losses. You're down 4.6 units betting every game on Atlanta. Why? Well, they lose at minus 215, lose at minus 225, lose at minus 170, lose at minus 175. The teams that are overhyped are going to cost you more money, and that's a fact. Two more quick things, actually three more quick things before we get to Paul Zilm from Circa. Matt Jones, very good radio host, Kentucky Sports Radio. He tweeted this out. He has a Facebook Messenger chat with Kentucky Senator C.B. Embry, who is against sports betting because all of the, quote, throwing of games, unquote, that will take place. Jonesy asked him a question, are you against this bill? Senator says yes. And Jones goes, well, wait, how do we draw the line between horse racing and betting on the Lakers? And the senator said, well, I'm worried about players throwing games. Okay. You think a player in the NBA making, what, $15 million a year is going to throw a game and put it all on the line for, what, 10 grand? Come on. 100 grand? Whatever. I don't even know what the payout is. But why would I risk my livelihood if I'm an NBA player making $10 million a year or more? Why am I going to throw a game and potentially be banned from basketball for an extra, you know, little bundle of money? It's just, it's the same old story. These old fossils don't know the deal. They're anti-change. They don't want anything new. But that state is very interesting because they didn't even show to vote for the bill. The bill, I've been told, was going to pass, but there were a lot of people that just didn't show up and didn't vote. So you have a state that prides itself on horse racing and horse gambling, but when it comes to betting on the NFL, too much shady shit can go on. Uh-huh. Got it. We've got week one spreads in college football. Brad Powers tweeted these out. These are William Hill lines. Nebraska minus 10.5 against Northwestern. That game is in Ireland. Pittsburgh minus 7 against West Virginia. Ohio State minus 13 against Notre Dame. That line opened up at 10.5, and it's been blasted up. And I'll tell you, it probably gets to 14 by August, September. Florida minus 1 against Utah. I'll be on the Utes there. Arkansas minus 8 against Cincinnati. Mississippi State minus 8 against Memphis. Georgia minus 15 against Oregon. Wow. Home game. Game is in Atlanta, but 15 is a big number. I wouldn't take the points. I just probably pass the game. Georgia can win that game 28-10. LSU minus 3.5 against Florida State. That's in New Orleans. And Clemson minus 21.5 at Georgia Tech. A bounce back year for the Tigers? Question mark. They've been waiting all offseason for this game. 42-7, maybe. I lean to Ohio State. I lean to Utah. But hey, it's April 20th. There's a long way to go. Last thing. Every Tuesday night, I'm going to do a Spaces on Twitter. 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, back to my radio roots. I miss the days of being able to talk with listeners. And we've done two now. Last Tuesday with Eric Eager and Mo Pearson. Last night, Brad Powers and Ariel Epstein with a surprise cameo by Kelly Stewart. I wanted it to go an hour. I told Powers, hey, check in at 8, Ariel 8:30, we're done at 9. Kelly hops on, and all of a sudden, somebody asks a question in that space about the mental side of sports betting and how do you handle losing? And it really turned into a conversation with three people about the space and the ups and the downs and the wins and the losses and how we handle certain things. And it was really, I thought it was really informational and really educational. And I think being able to do that, it helps everybody out. Well, not everybody. You know, professional bettor's not going to listen to my spaces. He doesn't care. He's too busy firing games. But I think to speak to most people that are doing this for fun, doing it for a hobby, I think being able to listen to people that do this for a living and talk about this for a living, to be able to hear them speak, to interact with them, to ask questions. We took about 8 questions on the spaces last night. And I was amazed that at the peak, we had 135 people tuning into a space. That's a lot for space number 2. And it's not all me. I know that. You have Ariel and Kelly, who are 2 very respected people in sports betting. But this is something that I want to do every Tuesday. And it's an off night. There's not a lot going on a Tuesday, even during football season when it's, you know, Monday night football and then it's snoring until Thursday night. I feel like it's a good mix. And I believe Nick Costos from You Better You Bet on Odyssey, he's going to join me next Tuesday. I want to get a guest or two every week and see where things go. So that's the plan going forward. Every Tuesday night, 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast and 5 o'clock on the West Coast. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, he is a risk supervisor at Circus Sports in Las Vegas, focusing completely on the race book, and he has been busy over the last 4 months or so with the Kentucky Derby future markets. He's on Twitter at Paul Zilm. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, you got a fast one on me because Classic Causeway will not be winning the Kentucky Derby, so you can keep that 200 and change that I was very happy to bet at about 20 or 25 to 1. This is how it goes, though, man. We're about 3 weeks away from the race. It looks like you've got one of the better bets going, and then all of a sudden, poof, it's gone.
It can be a hurtful time when you make it through the majority of the prep season and you got a horse that's, you know, up until the Florida Derby looked like the real deal and still can be in other races down the road. But you're thinking, okay, you know, all you ask in these futures is get me to the gate, get me to the first Saturday in May, because I'm going to have an overlay more than likely. It could be a tremendous amount, and you're there. And then all of a sudden one bad run and the trainer says, nope, this isn't for us. We're going to do something else. And it's kind of a little bit of a kick to the gut.
It's frustrating because he didn't even have to run in the last race. And I think we've learned over the last 5-10 years, not only in horse racing, but in NBA. I mean, my God, all the load management with Kawhi Leonard waiting for the playoffs. This horse, Classic Causeway, was, I think you guys had him at 8 or 10 to 1 to win the race. Not only was he in, but he was one of the heavy hitters.
Yeah, you know, for a time before the Florida Derby, he was top two or three, you know, along with Epicenter and Messier, even before Messier was transferred. And, you know, he had a couple of really impressive performances at Tampa Bay, had clear leads, went wire to wire and really looked the part. And, you know, had some kind of slower speed figure numbers for the analytics guys in the horse racing world. But eyeball wise, he was impressive. And then I felt like they kind of rushed him to go to the Florida Derby, where they could have either sat him all the way until the Kentucky Derby, or they could have ran him last week in the Bluegrass. And, you know, they kind of rushed it, and it's turned out to be a bad decision as far as pursuing the roses on May 7th.
How confident do you feel about having Epicenter as the favorite right now at Circa, the number 5 to 1? How confident are you in that number? And what do you think that number could look like week of the race?
You know, I think Epicenter is the rightful favorite. You know, you have a couple other horses who have a ton of potential, and I know we'll talk about them in Messier and then Taiba. We were just discussing exactly how to say it, and I really don't know.
No idea.
But with Epicenter, you know, the horse ran, you know, every race that he needed to in Louisiana, looked good in doing so. You know, he didn't win all three, but even the one where he, you know, got beat was impressive. And so barring any type of a workout setback, you know, I think 5 to 1 is probably close to as high as you'll get on the horse. I think on Derby Day could be as low as, 7 to 2 favorite. It'll be interesting to see just who's all entered into the gate. If everyone who makes it in now, I'd say 7 to 2 or 4 to 1 makes perfect sense.
And then the last horse that you added on your very long roster of names is Taiba, 45312 at Circus Sports. It's not often, well, I'm going to guess it's not often that the last horse you add to the sheet is one of the co-favorites.
No, it really was an unusual circumstance, and I was hesitant on adding him after just his maiden victory. One, because it was a maiden victory, although impressive, wasn't against the toughest talent out there, but also at that time was trained by Baffert. And, you know, that late into the prep season, I told myself that it doesn't make sense to add a horse that's trained under Baffert until they get transferred. And he was transferred at the very last second to run in last week's Santa Anita Derby. So as soon as I knew he was transferred, put him up on the board, was going to offer him close to 100 to 1, 90 to 1 was the number I was going to put in there, because I thought this horse has only ran once. He's going to be in over his head. You know, let's let people get a good look at him. And then a couple people said, you know, you might be a little high on that number. And so we settled on 65-1 and got a bet within less than 2 minutes, probably less than the time it'll take to run the actual Kentucky Derby. I got a max bet and kind of got bet all the way down to about 28-1 over the course of last week before the Santa Anita Derby. And then was super impressive on the Santa Anita Derby. You know, we had the pool closed as the three preps last week took place. So after the race, you know, as I was looking to update the odds and open them back up, I said, well, you know, this horse isn't even going to be double digits anymore. He's going to draw attention. He's got the human connection of, you know, formerly Baffert trained, high priced, same owner as Medina Spirit. And visually was an impressive win last Saturday. So he currently sits at 6.5-1, which we've taken a couple of nibbles there. Nothing enough to move on it yet.
Odds are good you don't have a pager, but I can't help picture you wearing the pager when you get a max bet on a horse at 65-1. And it's like,
it's funny, you know, everything, the new age pager now is, you know, whatever. Real-time chat apps that organizations use. So the Slacks, the Telegrams, the Signals of the world. And so we, you know, when I'm not in the office, that's kind of how we communicate. And, you know, I'll get updates. Guys will send me, you know, hey, just took this bet. I moved it here. You know, are you comfortable with that? Do you want to go back up a little bit? Do you want to go further? And I had sent in to add this horse, and literally before I could like turn away and take a sip of water, I get a response that said, you know, just took a max bet, and, you know, has obviously all the information of the bet in there. And I said, well, that didn't take long. And then it just kind of happened for a little bit. And I think it was on Monday or Tuesday that I placed it, and by Thursday or Friday, we were in the mid 20s. And I was like, well, you know, luckily we had a little bit of breathing room there because he was such a late addition, but popular horse indeed.
Which horse or horses make you nervous?
Well, there's two ways to answer that question. There's one at the straight liability, you know, when you look at, you know, what we lose to the horse if it ran today. And the horse that we actually lose the most to right now is Morello. And it didn't have a great performance in the Wood Memorial. There's talk now that the horse may or may not pursue the Derby. Although the liability is pretty high, you know, I'm not as scared as I was before last week. He was a horse that we opened in the mid hundreds, 150-1, I think. And, you know, just got bet down along the way, and we were taking good bet still at, you know, when he was 45-1 and 40-1. And that's kind of the difference maker for us. You know, we'll move pretty aggressively on limit bets when we're in the hundreds and 200s, just because you have to. The volume of the pool just isn't quite at that level where you can just hang out there like maybe you can in college basketball, because you know the volume is just going to make up for it. So we have to move pretty aggressively. It's those bets that you get in between, you know, 30-1 and 80-1 that, man, I still can't believe they're betting this horse this far out at that number and on the way down. And Morello is kind of like that. I think we got to a point, you know, still took like, you know, high over the counter bets at 20-1, which was really surprising to me. So that put us in a little bit of a negative situation there. But, you know, because of some defections, you know, we really don't have, you know, Emmanuel was a horse that we were losing a lot to as well. And he's now off the Derby trail. So Morello is kind of the big number, but that can change a lot in the next 3 weeks too.
I have a buddy of mine who I had on the show earlier this week, Colin Shee, and he handicaps the horses and does pretty well. He said that one of the horses that he likes to crash the party, a secondary horse, if you will, is Barber Road. And I think you guys have Barber Road at about 30-1. As you know, Paul, a horse 30-1, 40-1, 50-1, if that horse places or shows, that ticket, that exacta or that trifecta, if you box it, it gets a whole lot happier on the payout side. Is there a horse down the page that you like maybe more than others in the market? Is there a horse in that 30-50 range that is live to maybe crash the party?
you know, I think Barber Road makes sense in that regard. You know, he hasn't quite been able to get over the top and win a race, but he's kind of always closing. He's always there, second, third, and he's seems to be a game horse. I moved him up a little bit this morning. He's at 33-1 currently. And I think he fits anywhere from 30 to 40, just about where you kind of find him at. The thing about the horse is he's an honest horse. He'll be, you know, pretty fresh when it comes time for the race. And, you know, very rarely do you see, you know, chalk all the way through the exotics in the Derby. You know, usually you get a Dallas Stewart horse at 65-1 that might, you know, hit the place spot or the show spot. And I don't know if we'll get a horse that high this year, but I think Barber Road is a horse that's very likely. And then just looking here, and not to, you know, just cheat off of the one you suggested, you know, the horse that's the Japanese horse that did well in the Dubai race, Crown Pride. Now, every year people get excited about the Japanese or the Dubai Invader. You know, every year you hear, oh, this could be the year. This could be the year. This could be the year. I kind of like this horse. You know, I have him at 50-1 right now on our board. And I think, assuming, you know, he's still in quarantine at Churchill Downs. So I don't, you know, he hasn't had a full workout to the best of my knowledge there yet. So it'll be interesting to see once he does. But he's been galloping out on the track there, and it's been wet and muddy and seems to be doing okay. So assuming that he doesn't hate the track when he goes out for a recorded work, it's a horse that I think will take a little bit of money and could be closer to 30-1 come race day. And his running style, and, you know, Japanese horses are starting to kind of really make a name. They've got a lot of good sires over there now. And, they're inching up the board as far as top quality talent, and Crown Pride could be the horse that they either crashes the party and gets a, you know, spot in the exact or trifecta, or who knows, might even get the right trip and find a way to win the race. It's a horse to keep an eye on, I think.
Another horse that I've heard about, and I'm scared to death about this horse because of the name and the relation, or not really relation, but I guess the correlation that I have with another horse that I bet and lost a lot of money on. There's a horse you have at 125-1 named Un Ojo, which is, of course, Spanish for one eye. I had a lot of money on Patch back in the day. I mean, he was the one-eyed horse. I think he was out of the 20 hole. We thought it was cool because it was going to be the first one-eyed horse ever to win the Derby, and it was a disaster. Finished 14th or 15th, but the novelty horse is always one that I feel like I have to bet every year. I have to throw a horse or two with either a great name or a great story into my sheet, and I guess that's why I don't win when I bet horse races. But people do bet you on name and novelty, right?
Oh, absolutely. And although, you know, I have this horse almost double what our competitors currently have. And the reason being is I just didn't, you know, the prep race that he won, I thought was arguably one of the weakest prep races throughout the entire season leading up to the Derby. And he could prove me wrong, and I'm not going to be stubborn and just keep him there and just take money after money after money. So as people start to bet him, you know, we'll definitely adjust and move him down. But the public, especially, you know, those who are betting into the parimutuel pools the day of the race, once they find out that it's a one-eyed horse, absolutely they'll bet it purely on that because it's a feel-good story. People like that on the NBC broadcasts when, you know, the Triple Crown races. You know, that's for the non-racing fan, that's kind of how they can latch on and identify, you know, whether it's a filly competing against the boys, it's a one-eyed horse, it's a horse that was the 10K claimer that now is running for, you know, the most prized trophy in American horse racing. You know, people like that. And I expect Un Ojo to certainly get that type of play. Now, whether he'll get the sharper action or not, that's still to be determined. But we won't win to Un Ojo. I'll tell you that right now. There'll come a point where I'm like, if we are winning to the horse, then I don't have the horse high enough.
So, if Un Ojo wins the Derby, Metcalf's going to chase you around Circa with a machete.
Yeah, he always tells me not to be too stubborn. And he also does give me plenty of leeway. So when he hears this, he'll probably keep an eye on this horse and just say, you know, it's okay if we lower a little bit, you know, once that liability starts getting higher.
So I'll ask you a very open-ended question, and you can take this really wherever you want. It could be from your days booking big races or betting big races. Do you have a favorite result in the history of your years betting or booking the Kentucky Derby? Is there a specific one that stands out?
You know, my favorite is betting. 2006 Barbaro was a great story. Went off as the favorite, if I do recall, but it was 6-1. And I had, you know, followed the horse through the prep season then and kind of had made money along the way. And I'm not a chalk player on Derby Day typically. But that year, you know, I singled him in pick threes and pick fours and had a win ticket. And, you know, obviously didn't get rich enough to retire. But financially, 2006 Derby was a good time for me. And, you know, obviously his story took a turn, you know, a couple of weeks later when he got hurt in the Preakness and subsequently the, I think, year-long battle he had before, you know, he passed. But Barbaro Derby wins my favorite. And then on a side note, you know, I worked for Churchill Downs for a few years and I was working there 2009 when they dedicated a Barbaro statue for him, and it was right outside my office window. So every day I got to look at the statue, and so that's always kind of been my favorite Derby moment. But as far as booking, and we've only, you know, this will only be the third year that we've done this at Circa, but
when they overturned Maximum Security,
that year was I was still behind the counter when I was working for Tanner Gaming, so I was a line supervisor that day. And not so funny story, if you had him, he was the favorite, obviously, is everybody, you know, saw the race, he crossed the wire first. The line to cash tickets was out the sports book and down the Cosmopolitan Hall. And I was, you know, we were obviously waiting for the race to go official. And, you know, we had a few riders and other soups who weren't big into the horse racing world. And like, what are we waiting for? I said, we're waiting to watch all these people get really pissed off here in about 2 minutes when they disqualify this horse and they don't understand why their ticket is now a losing ticket.
Oh, no.
And I didn't gloat in that because, you know, that was pari-mutuel at Cantor at the time, or at Cosmo. And when it's pari-mutuel, you know, you're like, hey, let's root for winners because they're probably going to churn it back anyway. But I wanted to see the reaction, and I've never seen a line get so full so fast. And then subsequently everyone scatter really pissed off. And, you know, because nobody in that sports book had Country House to win that thing. I don't know if we paid more than 5 tickets when we probably would have been paying Maximum Security tickets for the next 2 hours otherwise. But booking it, the first year we did it was the delayed year at Circa when it ran in September because of the pandemic shutdown. And, you know, Authentic won. And I remember I'm in the risk room, I'm watching the race, kind of gave everybody the heads up. Hey, this is who we're rooting for. This is kind of who we hope doesn't win. And I had kind of flip-flopped my numbers in my head. And I told everyone that Authentic was a horrible, horrible result for us. So as the horse crosses the wire, I'm using every cuss word I know, and I'm so pissed and I'm just mad. And then probably 5 minutes later, Chris Bennett, our assistant sportsbook director, says, you know, after we grade it and you can kind of look at the results, he's like, you know, we won money to this horse. And I had to kind of go back and look, and I was just like, shows you what I know. See, set your expectations so low, and then it's just over deliver. But, you know, I was rooting against the horse that we actually needed. So, it is what it is. But kind of in hindsight, it was pretty funny.
The results are all that matter. Not your comment, just the results. And that's it. Last question. If I send somebody to Vegas or I come back in the summer, June or July, I hear you're the king of the steakhouse. Where's the place to go get a chop in town?
Oh, man. I didn't know this was going to be a 2-hour podcast, because here we go.
Uh-oh, and we're out of time. Thank you, Paul, so much.
Barry's at Circa, obviously newest to the one of the newest, is great. The vibe is fun. My cell phone doesn't work down there because of the, it's in the basement. So it's kind of nice to feel a little detached from the world. They do an old fashioned tableside cart. If you like a good old fashioned where you can pick the wood that it's smoked with, it's phenomenal. But I know people are going to say, oh, he's a company guy. So going outside the company, Oscar's downtown just had the other night, took a friend to it took my brother to it for the first time. That's great. One that I think gets often overlooked off the strip is Herbs and Rye, and then its sister one, Cleaver. For the value, you can't beat it. It's probably paying half the price of what you pay on the strip. Has everything you need, good steaks, good cuts of meat, good sides, and then most importantly, awesome drinks. So those are just some of them, but we could talk about it all day.
I'm adding Herbs and Rye to the list. I haven't been there yet. And I have one for you. I'm sure you've been there, but most people, when I tell them this, they just laugh in my face. There's not a bad steak at the steakhouse at Circus Circus. My dad took me there when I turned 22. I'm like, I don't fucking know about this place, Dad, because we walk through like the kiddie park and the concrete and the gang signs, and then we get into the steakhouse, and it's a pretty good steak.
You're exactly right. And as soon as you said it's, one you wouldn't expect, I knew where you're going. And I've been there a couple of times with my fiance and then with some friends. And once you get past what you're walking in from, Circus Circus is
a dump.
Dump is a polite way to do it. But once you get past that, you like turn into this, corner or to this hallway, it's got those wooden doors. I think they are. It's like you step into a whole nother place, and the smell from the grill kind of hits you. Old school banquettes. And one of the unique things that, at least for Las Vegas, that you don't see anymore is it's not a la carte. So, you get your potato and your vegetable. I can't remember if salad comes with it, but it's, you don't have to order 9 different things to complete your meal. Just kind of a step back to the quote unquote, the way it used to be, but it's high quality. And I think it's a great place to take people and surprise them. Good choice.
It is a surprise. That's for sure. That is Paul Zim. He's a risk supervisor at Circus Sports. Please follow Paul on Twitter at Paul Zim, ZILM. I appreciate your time, man. Good luck. And, hopefully you come out again for the house on May 7th. Thanks again.
Thank you for having me, and good luck to everyone with whatever tickets they have. Enjoy the race.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Paul Zilm for checking in from Circus Sports. Our record check, 245, 248, and 8. We are up 11.9 units, and we've got two pending plays right now. The Bucks minus 2.5 games in the series. That's plus 100. Bucks are up 1-0, so I need them to win 4-0 or 4-1, and I added the Nets series at plus 190. Coming up on the show, Devin Caney from Eagles Post Game Live and Superbook Sports. She will join us on the episode later on this week. I know she's dying to get these Sixers in the NBA Finals. I don't know about all that. Devin also doing a lot of work for the Superbook for our friends in Nevada, Arizona, New Jersey, Colorado. So we'll talk to her about her dip into the sports betting space. Cash up tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner. Broken dreams held together with glue. I gotta keep on trying till that day comes true. I know that all my life I've been tired and blue, but still I keep on fighting. I got too many things left to do. You see, my brother told me so. You'd be the greatest man alive. Until I'm through, it gotta take me home. Everything that comes out of my trombone.